Chabot, reel number 12. If we could recap for a bit, go backwards to your time in Mesopotamia. You joined their number 30 squadron, did you? Flying BE-2Cs.
BE-2C. Yes. I've got to scratch the back of my head about Mesopotamia a bit.
What was it like to fly over the country? Could you see sort of evidence of former civilizations and so on?
I think the background of Mesopotamia. I got out of track over this, really.
You were actually at Thetford before you went to Mesopotamia.
Yes, it was at Thetford that I don't actually remember receiving the instructions. I don't remember the actual incident of receiving instructions about Mesopotamia, but I was posted on from Thetford, where I had been instructing and doing this and that, Mesopotamia. And I don't even at this moment remember, I think it was somewhere in South Wales that we embarked and found myself in a ship bound for Mesopotamia. And off we went through Biscay and the Mediterranean and so on, into Malta. I remember Malta quite a bit. But one of the things that does, which I do recollect very well indeed, is the fact that this was a North Atlantic ship. She was an ordinary trading ship taken out of the North Atlantic and put onto this job of troop carrying. And being a North Atlantic ship, she had no allowances for tropics, no allowances for tropics at all. And the iron decks of this ship got red hot. She was stacked jolly well full of troops who were on their way to Mesopotamia. And it was not comfort by any means. And so much so, there was an awful lot of sickness arising from straight heat on the way out through the Red Sea and that sort of thing. And by the time we got up to Basra, and quite a lot of people went straight into hospital of some kind. And of the number of people we had in that ship, I can't recollect how many, but the number who actually reached the campaign front in Mesopotamia, up on the Tigris or wherever it was, could be almost counted on a couple of handful. I and one other chap were the only two, as far as the flying corps was concerned. Myself and a chap called McCrindle, who afterwards became a big shot on Airways at home. And we went up and as reinforcements to 30 Squadron, which was desperately, desperately in need of somebody to carry on with the work. The squadron itself had been actually reduced to nil aircraft at about the time that I got there. That was very largely due to a bit of a Mesopotamian hurricane. You wouldn't call them a hurricane, I don't know what they're called, but winds which you don't meet at ordinary places. Had bowled over the main part of the squadron, In any case, it was a very, very, very much touch and go affair. Mind you, you must remember this, that as on the other side of the picture, the Turks, with I might say that the job that we were on at this time was the recapture of Kut. Kut had fallen. Kut was held by the Turks. They had not only Kut, but they had quite extensive trench fortifications running along the north side of the Tigris. Tigris or Euphrates? Tigris. We were on the south side. And as far as aircraft are concerned, although we were reduced to nil and one or two, the Turks on the other side were reduced to nil and then were reduced to one. But the one which they were reduced to was an interrupter gear Fokker. And we were in B2C. We had B2C. We had one or two short horns. And we had a very curious machine called a Steel Henry, which was a kind of Henry Farman, which had been specially devised by Henry Farman Company for use in tropics. And I believe the only campaign on which these were used to any extent was in East Africa somewhere. We had precisely one amongst the aircraft which we had in 30 Squadron. And interestingly enough, in that heat that we lived in, and which our aircraft lived in, you can quite imagine the aircraft were absolutely desiccated, absolutely desiccated. And the propellers, for instance, so desiccated that, I'm not exaggerating, it was quite possible to stick a feeler in between the laminations of a prop in many cases due to heat. They really were cooked right up. In spite of this, the only one case that I remember of a breakup in the air, which the machine broke up and wrote off its pilot and so on, was one of these Steel Henrys. Very extraordinary. Now, in my own particular job in Mesopotamia, in the main, in any case, when we started advance against Kut, was liaison with cavalry. You see, the cavalry at this time played quite an extensive part as cavalry. In fact, I should think it's the last campaign in history, I would suspect, the last campaign in history in which cavalry has been used as cavalry was intended to be used. That is to say, doing extensive reconnaissance. And I have watched lancers. I have actually watched lancers with their lances down, charging into the enemy with their lances. That's a thing you won't see in this modern day. In the question of liaison with cavalry, one of the more interesting things happened. There was a cavalry reconnaissance, a cavalry expedition was being made against the bridge across the Tigris above Kut, with the idea of destroying this bridge, which was the only one bridge which the river was crossed by, and to the upstream of Kut. And the cavalry were out several days from their base on this job, and I would go out each day and pick up the threads of where they were, and knowing in which direction they were advancing, I'd scout around ahead. And drop notes, no communication between air and ground, don't forget. The communication was by means of message bag. And I'd give as much description as I could of what lay ahead of them.
Did you do these flights on your own, or did you have an observer?
In this case, had an observer, generally speaking. and jotted down on a note wherever general in command of the cavalry was, he would have a ground sheet put out and dart down and chuck this thing over onto the ground sheet and giving him this whatever information it was that you'd give him. I might say that one of the most interesting things that happened, that could happen in this sort of warfare is a fact, because if there was anything in the note which you just passed down to the CO, in any case, when you tossed the note out, there'd be a rush from somewhere, or somebody would come galloping up to pick up this note and gallop away with it to wherever the general would be. And then you'd see, as you circled around, you'd see one or two chaps on horseback standing around. They would then dart off in various directions, charging across the desert, following up some orders which had been sent out in view of what you had just been able to tell them. And so you really saw something practical happening as a result of what you were doing. Which, to see something practical happening as a result of what you're doing is a bit unusual in this sort of warfare, I think. Cavalry reconnaissance, which I was just telling you about, which was intended to attack the bridge above Kut, was out for several days. And when it had got almost within hailing distance of their objective, there was a pause in the whole operation, and the cavalry did not seem to be advancing any farther. I couldn't understand it, and I imagined that I must possibly have missed something, that they wouldn't have stopped for no. They wouldn't have stopped for no reason at all. And there must be something, there must be some obstruction of some kind between them and the bridge, which was definitely holding them up. I couldn't see anything. And so I'd better go down and have a better look. So I came down. Mind you, we weren't working at very great heights. This sort of a job you'd work at about 4,000 or 5,000 feet. And I came down to have a closer look and make certain that I hadn't missed anything. And sure enough, I had missed something, because the bang bang and a strut was shot out of my B2C, and she proceeded to almost slow spin, not quite slow spin, but almost practically uncontrollable. I managed to get my nose into the direction in where the cavalry were, but losing height. And I was able to put her on the deck within a mile or so of where the cavalry were. The cavalry had seen what happened, and they came charging up. There was an exciting desert rescue, and a bit of rope was found from somewhere and tied onto the undercarriage of the of this disabled aircraft, and we rumbled away. In a southerly direction, and that was that as far as my reconnaissance was concerned. And I spent the next two or three days with the cavalry. On their way back to headquarters. It having been decided that the Turks, who were stationed on the south of the bridge, on the south side of the bridge, were sufficient of an obstruction to make their raid on the bridge out of the question, and so the whole thing was being withdrawn. I spent a day or two with the cavalry on this occasion. Again, a very interesting experience, because the cavalry acting at this time in a way which was, and I think I said before, it's the last time in history that cavalry had been known to act as cavalry. I eventually got home. Getting home was the basis of a rather naughty adventure, I'm afraid. In the mess...
Perhaps I could